Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, it's Watt Harris here, another Panther Rants podcast. It's late Thursday. I'm recording on my way home from work. Although, I wanted to do this Friday morning, but I got the urge to do it today. Don't ask me why, okay? But I am. In fact, I'm kind of glad I waited because I was going to do this Thursday morning and it was going to be pretty much a crappy news dump of stuff for my podcast that really you guys pretty much won't feel like listening to it anyway because it's a waste of your time. It'll just be pretty much random crap and overanalyzing some stuff from Pitt, and I'm sure this podcast will tail off as the summer comes because the news will just be not as much. But some interesting things have come up to point. Well, for one thing, Pitt just announced their Hall of Fame class for their athletics. Great class. I guess Tyler Palko was not on the list. I guess there's some people that joke. They said no Palko. Palko's probably not gonna get it. Not going to get in for a while. If they're doing this every year, I doubt he'll be on next class or class after that. Who knows? He might. You know. I mean, this is on your what they've done athletically, and I mean to be fair. If we're being realistic here, I mean, other than the Big East title getting us to the BCS and the 5-touchdown F-bomb game against Notre Dame, his first year as a starter at Pitt, there's not really much else to write about Tyler Palko the rest of his career. Basically, he went through a coaching change and he went 11-12 as a starter for the rest of his career at Pitt, and they didn't go to a single bowl game after that. Not to mention, 2006 they started 6-1 and they imploded big time. And you can't really put that on Palko at all. Well, you probably can part of it, but it just that year. Basically, they went 6-1 because they played pretty much a bunch of cupcakes. A lot of his teams sucked. They were just bad teams. I mean, Virginia was bad. Their only loss during that stretch was Michigan State, and Michigan State wasn't even that good. In fact, they were on the cusp of beating Notre Dame, I think, a week later. They were crushing them, and their coach was John L. Smith, and John L. Smith does John L. Smith things, and well, that was that. You know, of course, Pitt was undersized, unfortunately. They were still undersized, so when they went to play Michigan State, you know, at home, you know, Michigan State eventually wore them down and imposed their will. So, you know, Pitt was still just going through that transitional thing, and we thought after the first year we worked at the Kings, but it turns out we were going to need more time than anything else. And eventually we had to hire a new strength and conditioning guy because we didn't like the guy that we had. So we brought back Buddy Morris, and Buddy was having these guys supposedly, dragging the cathedral around, pretty much. So, yeah, that's the unfortunate thing about Tyler's career is he went through a coaching change, and not to mention the talent they had around him just wasn't good. skill player wise, he had players around him. It's just he didn't have people to block for him. And pretty much, you know, that final game when he played against Louisville, Hines, that pretty much summed up his career for the most part, where he pretty much was running for his life for most of it. But, yeah, they went 6-1 that year, and once the schedule got tougher, that was about it. You know, one game they lost that was very unfortunate was UConn, where they blew a 14-point lead late in the game, where Matt Cavanaugh was trying to run LaRod Stevens up the middle to kill the clock. And, of course, DJ Hernandez made her defense in the Swiss cheese. And yeah, 2006 was pretty much a forgettable year, as was 2005. But if you look at the list, it's pretty much your football-wise, you know, Ditka, Marino, Dorsett, Frelick, Goldberg, Green. It's your typical things. It's your typical names when you think of a Pitt football, and it's golden history. And then, of course, basketball, your obvious one's Charles Smith. When you think of Pitt hoops, Charles Smith. But, of course, there's other guys, too, from Pitt Hoops back in those days. I mean, Sam Clancy's another guy. Jerome Lane. Brian Shorter. Jason Matthews. I mean, there's a bunch of guys from Pitt Hoops. And if we're going, you know, of course, Orlando Antigua as well. I mean, but Orlando, you know, I think Orlando was on the tail end of those Paul Evans teams. Their early Willard years teams. And, you know. And there's Vontigo Cummings as well, and Vontigo, unfortunately, didn't play on really any good Pitt teams. I mean, there was the NIT team in 96-97, but that was about it. They just never really... 98-99 was supposed to be the year for Pitt hoops, but and they went started off with a tear, and then they imploded against Maryland. They were just never in that game. Maryland was a really good team. I mean, they were on the cusp of being really good. But after the UConn game, where they imploded that game, they fell apart as a whole because, well, they were pretty much getting their five-finger discounts on the hotel telephones and things and... Yeah. But of course, not just, you know, all that, but also with hoops, you got Doc Carlson, who, you know, was the winningest coach in Pitt Hoops. They won two national titles with him. That's back in the early days of Pitt Hoops. You know, when they used to play in the gymnasium underneath Pitt Stadium. Yeah, if you ever, if there's one piece of ring I recommend as a Pitt fan, is the history of Pitt basketball. It even has pictures of the old Pitt gymnasium. You know, from when I used to play. And basically, it was pretty much underneath Pitt Stadium for the most part. That's where it was. Which makes me wonder what they did with that room. I mean, I think they made it into a weight room, possibly. I have to look it up and see, but it'd actually be kind of cool if they'd have kept that room, if that room is still underground and still intact, and it was like a time capsule. I mean, they could have had a game. They could have their games there, you know, for the Stallings era. Just put the games there because I think that gymnasium probably only sell like probably 200 people. Shoot, we would have a packed crowd every day. And of course, we also have the Olympic sports as well. You know, we got Herb Douglas, Roger Kingdom, Lisa Shirk, Trisha K. Smith, who obviously is, you know, really decorated in track and field. And of course, we got John Woodruff, And, you know, he really doesn't need no introduction. His name speaks for itself. So, it's a pretty solid list. I mean, it's a really good list. I mean, who could get in next? Olympic sport-wise, I'm not sure who else. I'm sure there's plenty of names. I just don't know them off my head. It would take research. But obviously, if I'm talking Pitt football, Pitt basketball, bunch of guys. Mark May, he's one. He could be in the next class. Maybe Larry Fitzgerald. Although Larry didn't win the Heisman or anything, he won the Blitnikoff. Antonio Bryant, another Blitnikoff winner. So, Aaron Donald, because he won all those trophies. I mean, he took him a whole bunch of hardware that year. I mean, those are obvious. I mean, if we're looking like recent years, there's some, Donald and Fitzgerald are obvious picks from that group. So, but as Pitt Hoops goes, you're looking at Clancy, Jerome Lane, Sean Miller, another obvious choice, but I'm not sure how that goes. Jamie Dixon, although he coaches at TCU now, he's a big part of Pitt's basketball history now for all he's done. So regardless of him leaving, he's still a big part of the history of the Pitt program. So he's another one. So there's plenty of names to go by. Plenty of names. So moving on, I saw there was another article on the Pitt-Penn State rivalry today, and I really didn't read it at all, but I did see Dream Backfield, the guy who runs the site, I guess the Twitter account, I guess, mentioned, I guess, the two-for-one thing. And so, of course, I read the article anyway, and yep. Sacrifices have to be made to make this rivalry go, so Pitt should accept the two-for-one. And that's what really gets me going is, we're not going to accept a two-for-one, ever. That's not how we play ball. If Pitt was Akron, pun intended, maybe even any other MAC school, Pitt would do a two-for-one. Pitt is in a position where it doesn't have to accept ask a two-for-one, or should have to play one. Just like Penn State, Pitt doesn't have to play Penn State at all either. So let's not get it twisted here. Because here's the thing. When Pitt wasn't playing Penn State after 2001, Pitt was still on the cusp of rebuilding their program. 2002, a few games here and there, Pitt's probably in contention for the Big East title, let alone BCS. The only thing that stopped Pitt that year was having a quarterback. That was it. Rod Rutherford was still developing, despite the fact he was in his third, probably his third year of the program, and it was his first year starting, and he just wasn't all there yet. But, and who knows, Rod may have been better suited by playing free safety, or corner, or even wide receiver. Although now, when you say those type of things, it gets you in trouble. But He's still in a decent... Rod's still in a decent football career. Even as a quarterback. But in that instance, that year, if people would have had an actual quarterback, you know, not so much... More of a seasoned quarterback, I should say. Heck, scratch that. If they had David Priestley for another year... They probably are contending for a BCS title. Or a BCS bowl game, I should say. Not the national title, but a bowl game. Because 2002, that defense was really good. It's just we didn't have it all there on offense yet. In 2003, we finally had together on offense. Rod was clicking. Fitz was a Heisman candidate. Marie, I think, was hurt for a good part of the year. That's one thing that plagued Pitt's offense that year, is not having a consistent running game. In turn, we had to throw the ball a whole lot. But still, we had enough firepower to move the ball and score points. It's just... The defense, especially on the defensive line, really let us down. But at the time, you know, that was a critical year, and Penn State was actually nervous about us. They were. To a point where they, when the Big East was breaking up, they went after some of our recruits, even some guys that they weren't even recruiting against us. They were going after these players and trying to get them to flip everything. They were watching Pitt very closely during that time. So, trust me, folks. The paranoia was there. It was there big time. It's just, we fell apart that season. The Big East fell apart. But Penn State thought that Pitt would be eventually on the level of the MAC forever, because nobody really respected Big East football, although it wasn't bad. It wasn't really that bad of a conference, even when Miami and Tech and BC left. It was actually a pretty good conference. Still, I liked it because it was a lot of misfit teams, and a lot of fan bases themselves were misfits, and it was great. We had a great time. But things had to change, and Penn State thought that Pitt would be on this lower part of the landscape, Pitt jumps to the ACC. And so the landscape with Pitt and Penn State football kind of evens out, although Penn State's always going to have a better program because they have the more money and more alumni support to do it. But conference-wise, the perception changes because Pitt's kind of an equal conference now, if not better, than Penn State football-wise. Well, lately, it's been better football-wise. And in the ACC, there's a lot more fur areas from the recruit, especially for Pitt to recruit. Whereas Penn State had to deal with the Midwest. And, you know, the Midwest pretty much is a dying area. The area is just dying. Okay, there's always going to be players, but Ohio State, Michigan's always going to grab a lot of them. Whereas you got a lot of people migrating to the Atlantic coast, especially after when all the mills shut down. That's where a lot of people migrated. So Pitt's in good hands. So Pitt doesn't really need to schedule Penn State. It'd be just a great game to have. Because Pitt can prosper without having to play Penn State. And the only winners in this is the state of Pennsylvania if this happens. But again, Pitt doesn't have to accept a 2-for-1 or sell for a 2-for-1 ever. They don't have to. They're doing just fine, regardless of what people think. But, as always, there's always be some moron in the media saying we should do a 2-for-1. Nope. Not doing it. If anything, just play West Virginia. That's all we gotta do. And there we go. We got our annual rivalry hate game. But other than that, I was gonna dig into well, for one thing, for Pitt basketball, Capel still on the prowl recruiting. Basically, the two guys he recruited, you know, Xavier Johnson, Trent McGowan, they signed their letters of intent. They're coming on board. No word on what's her faces. No word on Malik Ellison yet, and I'm wondering if maybe Jeff Capel is recruiting over him, and I hope that he is. Personally, I would be if I were Jeff Capel and force Ellison's hand, saying, "Hey, you know what? I got some other guys who want to come on board. If you want to, I've kissed your ass long enough. If you want to be here, fine. But I got other people that want to be here. And I think eventually it's going to come to that. So go sit another year and have fun with that. And pretty much you've wasted pretty much most of your college basketball career. Bye." Alright, so we knocked that one out of the park. One I was really gonna get into was basically Pitt football. Just looking over the roster and things, the depth chart, and the areas of concern for me. And basically my big area of concern for Pitt football right now is the offensive line and tight end. Because we obviously missed Scott Orndorff after he graduated. Because pretty much Orndorff was a big playmaker for us on offense, a tight end. And he was like a safety net as well. Nobody was open. They went to Orndorff. But one added bonus is we get George Aston back. And he was also a safety net as well. We needed a play, we dumped the ball to him because he had the ability to go out and catch passes. You know, back in 2 years ago, he helped us win a good bit of games. So we're getting him back, which is awesome. But yeah, those are that's the big area of concern because Matt Flanagan got hurt, Chris Clark never really wowed us, so I mean I really don't see Chris Clark as much of a loss because other than the Rice game there wasn't really much else he showed us. But I'm looking to see how, you know, if we make some sort of adjustments, you know, if we're not going to get much out of the tight end position, what does Sean Watson do in this point? And of course, you know, the offensive line is a new coach, and how are these guys going to develop as well? Because we lost a good bit of players due to graduation and guys going to the draft. So obviously, this is a bigger concern. I think the defense is going to ball out this year because they're deep than they've ever been, and it's about freaking time. Running back, wide receiver, we're fine because we got plenty of players, guys who can play. Wide receiver, though, we have plenty of talent. It's just we need the guy who's going to be the it guy. It's going to be Lopez because he was the leading receiver and he was dependable, but we need some guy who's going to be the it, the guy who's going to break the game open. We haven't really had that guy in a while. So, lots to think about. And to close out this whole thing, because I was going to talk NBA playoffs and things like that, and, you know, not all you guys watch that stuff, and you don't want to hear all that, so, but, you know, here in Houston, we had a local media shakeup, where we had one guy get fired, and one guy get suspended. You know, basically, you know, when I first moved to Houston, I didn't listen to Houston Sports Radio too much. I started listening to Lance Zierlein because he was doing some raps on Tom Savage, and then that's how I bumped in. He was doing a morning show with Am Clanton on 790, and basically they were my introduction to Houston sports talk. And Adam, I guess, just Adam got fired on Monday because he had a little Twitter spat with Josh Innes. Josh was in Houston for a while, then he went to Philly, got fired, and came back to Houston, and he's done pretty well since. He's known for what happened on Radio Row earlier this year, when he pretty much pushed the buttons of the rival AM station. But obviously, he didn't get along with some of the guys on 790, and Clayton's being one of them. But the problem with Clayton I had was the last year. I'm sure you guys can hear the big rig blaring as we're bumper to bumper traffic. Sorry about that. But the thing about Clayton is, the last year he was trying to emulate Clay Travis, and he did have Clay on his show, and according to Adam, them two text back and forth, and I wonder if Clay's found him a job yet. But lately, I've seen a lot of these guys do this where they try to emulate Clay Travis, and the thing about Clay is, the difference between Clay and a lot of these guys is that Clay has his own show and has his own website. He's got 600,000 Twitter followers. And, he makes a good bit of money off all that. Not to mention Fox picks up his show. He gets a whole bunch of sponsors. And on top of that, he has a law degree. So even if he doesn't, even if sports talk, if his site would fall apart, I'm sure he can go back to practicing law again. A lot of things he can do. A lot of these other guys are emulating Clay don't have that. Adam especially. So, Adam got fired for something very minor. And my guess is the station was probably looking to offload him for a while because of his behavior, mostly on Twitter. And they were looking for just for a reason to do it, and this was their reasoning. But he's still doing the Rockets broadcast, and I hope he lands on his feet. But it's just one of those cautionary tale things. But anyways, guys, it's 27 minutes. Hello, Pitt. Enjoy your weekend.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.